Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. We'll begin today by taking a little stock from a local standpoint of the historic first few weeks in office of New York City Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I think it's fair to say that whether you love her politics or hate them or are ambivalent about them, the Congresswoman has had a historic amount of influence already for a freshman member in office for less than 2 months. She's done more than anyone to put the Green New Deal on the map, was immediately influential in the fight against the Amazon deal, has been a big inspiration already to many people, and also a lightning rod for criticism. Some conservatives tried to discredit her by releasing a video of her dancing in college. Remember that? That backfired. There's an article out today in the British Daily Mail tabloid that I saw on a conservative site here suggesting she's a hypocrite for moving into what the article called a luxury apartment complex in D.C. that has no affordable housing, and then shopping at the nearby Whole Foods, which is owned by Amazon. Not many members of Congress would draw that article, no matter how long they've been there. Now, besides the headline-grabbing Amazon and Green New Deal actions, Ocasio-Cortez has also been doing things to support marginalized communities that get less attention. According to the website Gay City News, she dedicated that whole weekend of January 19th to supporting trans rights, mentioning trans issues in various appearances that may or may not have been specifically about that. She's agreed to be the first guest ever on Showtime's new late-night show. Jesus and Mero, who some of you may know from their podcast, The Bodega Boys, they're from the Bronx, and that show debuts tomorrow night at 11. She made news on one website for wearing big hoop earrings to her swearing-in in D.C., seen as a little pushback against perceptions of hoops as not dignified or professional enough for the occasion, with some race and class overtones of that perception, according to the article. Near the top of her Twitter feed this morning were articles about CNN hiring a former Trump official, Sarah Isger, as its new political editor, and about 70 or 80% of legal cannabis business executives in Colorado and Washington State being white or male. You get the idea. She and her allies in the group Justice Democrats are reported to already be considering backing primary challengers to other New York City Democrats considered too conservative or out of touch with their changing districts, as Joe Crowley was in hers. According to the New York Times, they could include Elliot Engel, Tom Suozzi, Yvette Clark, Jose Serrano, Kathleen Rice, and even Gerald Nadler. On the other side of the coin, The Intercept reports that some New York Democrats may already be plotting to redistrict AOC out of her office after the 2020 census. Now, the Times last week had a story about her not opening a district office yet, despite winning her primary largely on the basis of Crowley losing touch with the district. Part of the Amazon story is that polls showed majority support for Amazon in New York, including supermajority support of 70% among African Americans, 80% among Latinos responding in the Siena poll released just days before the collapse, raising in or out of touch questions for all the local polls, including AOC, who dug in against it. On Saturday, the Congresswoman gave her Inside the District inaugural address, something new members of Congress often do, at the Renaissance High School for Musical Theater and Technology on Tremont Avenue. Did you know Cardi B went to that school? At the swearing-in, the Congresswoman said it wasn't her side that doomed the Amazon deal without mentioning the company by name.
We need to create dignified jobs in New York City, jobs that pay well, jobs that contribute to community, jobs that are part of a moral economy. We do not have to settle for scraps in the greatest city in the world. We do not. We deserve more, and we can ask for more. And if people don't want to negotiate, that's their problem, not ours.
AOC from her Saturday inaugural at the Renaissance High School. When the Amazon deal collapsed, she celebrated it when asked by a reporter last Thursday.
I think it's incredible. I mean, it shows that everyday Americans still have the power to organize and fight for their communities, and they can have more say in this country than the richest man in the world.
AOC on Thursday. So we'll open up the phones now for your early reviews on this very high-profile freshman member of Congress. And we're going to give first shot on the phones to anyone from her district and who voted for AOC in the primary or general election. How's your new member of the House of Representatives doing so far for you as a constituent, according to you? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Let's hear from you if you voted for AOC and put her in office. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, and we'll open it up to everyone else after a little while. The district includes all our parts of Astoria, Woodside, Sunnyside, Jackson Heights, East Elmhurst, and Corona in Queens. LaGuardia Airport is in her district. Rikers Island is in her district. And East Bronx neighborhoods, including Throgs Neck, Baychester, Pelham Parkway, Morris Park, Parkchester, and around there. With me now are WNYC's Bridget Bergen, who covered the inaugural address Saturday and has deeply covered Queens politics before AOC came on the scene, and whoever covered Queens politics then, and Juan Manuel Benitez, host of Put a Politica on New York One Noticias, that's Spectrum News New York One's Spanish language station. He covered the congresswoman at a Bronx event with constituents yesterday and also got a one-on-one interview with her there. Hi, Bridget. Hi, Juan Manuel.
Good morning. Hey, Brian. Good morning. How are you?
Bridget, what was the inaugural ceremony in the Bronx like?
It was very festive. There were probably over 700 people there. Folks started lining up a good hour and a half before they could get into the high school. I talked to the first two people who were standing in line. They were both millennials. One woman who drove up from Washington, D.C., just because she feels so inspired by the congresswoman. And then she was joined by a friend of hers who actually used to work in Senator Schumer's office. And they, you know, when they heard this opportunity to come hear the congresswoman speak, they wanted to be sure to be there in person. There were also a lot of folks who had worked on, you know, getting her elected, people who had volunteered on the campaign, and several elected officials. You could start to feel kind of the edges of the 2021 mayoral race starting to take shape. Speaker Cory Johnson was there. Ruben Diaz Jr., the Bronx Borough President, was there. And State Senator Michael Generis, one of the loudest, most outspoken opponents of the Amazon deal, was there, addressed the crowd, and was actually greeted by sort of a thunderous applause when he walked in the room because there were a lot of other Amazon opponents there.
So since you mentioned Generis, here's the departing Daily News Albany Bureau Chief Ken Lovett on this program yesterday, attributing somewhat to Ocasio-Cortez the flip in position on Amazon from for it beforehand to against it when the deal was announced by State Senator from Western Queens, Michael Generis. Listen.
This really was the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez effect. You know, Gianara sent out, signed on to a letter before Ocasio-Cortez beat Joe Crowley, who Gianara was very close to. He signed on to a letter welcoming, saying, hey, come to New York, come to Long Island City. Well, we didn't know it was Long Island City, but come to New York, Amazon. And after Crowley lost, he shifted dramatically. You know, he was always more of a moderate, middle-of-the-road kind of Democrat, but since Ocasio-Cortez, he's not only, 2 days later was wearing a T-shirt with her name on it, but he has swung hard to the left.
Ken Lovett from the Daily News, now departed from the Daily News, but in that role as outgoing Albany Bureau Chief here yesterday. Bridget, as a reporter on Queens politics, how much do you agree with the suggestion in that clip that it's literally an AOC effect that flipped Senator Gianara from for it to against it?
So I think that is not completely, there's some validity to that, but I think it's missing the fact that not only was AOC elected in that district, but that's also where the heart of the No IDC campaign really started to grow. That's where Jessica Ramos beat the late State Senator Jose Peralta, and there was a lot of activism on the ground in Jackson Heights and in other parts of Queens, certainly that benefited Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez, but was not exclusive to Ocasio-Cortez. So I think, you know, Ken is correct that there is a lot of grassroots activism going on in Queens, particularly in that part of Queens right now. But I don't think it's all attributable to Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez.
But Janara's fearing a primary from the left, you would say that might have been a factor.
I think it is a factor in so much as he realizes what people on the ground are thinking and feeling, and it's listening to constituents. You know, Senator Janaris has been in office for a long time. He has a massive war chest, as did Congressman Crowley. So, you know, looking at what happened to Congressman Crowley, I think is instructive, but you know, he's much more on the ground. He's in the district on a regular basis. I don't think it's a direct comparison.
Juan Manuel, you spoke, to Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez, and I presume some of her constituents at that Bronx constituents meeting yesterday. To what degree was that a response to the Times article about her not having opened a district yet, which seemed to imply, if not state, that, you know, she was focusing too much on national politics and her new stardom and ignoring the district, much as Joe Crowley ignored the district and was defeated partly on that basis by her?
To tell you the truth, I don't know. I don't know, but one thing that I can tell you about the event yesterday is that it wasn't staged, that it felt extremely natural, that she was there in a back room in a public library. A lot of people didn't even notice that she was there, and she was there with her district director, and Maribel Hernandez, who actually one of your reporters, Matt Katz, profiled a few days ago. And she was there listening to some of the constituents that had come there to speak to her. And then she read some books to the kids in the library and spoke to some people, but it didn't feel staged. And if she wanted to counter, thinking about this, if she wanted to counter that view that was basically talked about in the Times article, she would have called everybody in the media, in the press, in New York to cover that. And she did it, and her team didn't. I just happened to talk to her team the day before on Monday. They told me she was going to be there. If I wanted to go and speak to the district director, I ended up talking to the congresswoman herself. And it's also extremely important, I think, Brian, to understand that she... Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez didn't come out of nowhere. She is channeling the ideas, the perspectives of many, many New Yorkers right now that didn't feel that some of the politicians representing them were really speaking about the issues they care about. And she's also channeling the views of many Americans all over the country. People founding her a spokesperson to ideas they have and that they didn't feel they were represented in Washington.
Listeners, we're going to take some phone calls starting right now from anybody in Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's congressional district, the 14th congressional district in parts of Queens and the Bronx. So if you're in the district, and especially if you voted for her, how's she doing for you so far in these first weeks in office, making such a splash on the national stage? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. From AOC Voters, Jimmy in Woodside, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling in. Hi there.
Hey, I'm a boomer. I was born in the Bronx, live in Jackson Heights. Met Alexandria and her team more than a year ago after probably when half a dozen of us were sitting in a taqueria on Roosevelt Avenue. And met her again and helped out with opposition research. I'm retired. And my comment is the young lady is a real deal. I converted. I was an independent since the Vietnam era, and I was as a protest in New York State. We know.
Let me ask you, because I'm going to jump in for time. You told our screener that you support her position on the Amazon deal. Describing your own background as you have, some people have said, well, those against the Amazon deal primarily have theirs already and feel like it's okay to take this ideological stance while depriving other people of jobs. What would you say to that?
I think the Amazon deal was very fortunate for her predecessor, Joe Crowley, who happened to get a nice job with a lobbyist on K Street, where one of the clients happened to be Amazon. Those big towers on Queensboro Plaza weren't put up on speculation. The deal was Amazon probably said, we can give it to New York and we can give it to any other community that we choose to. Don't push back on us.
Jimmy, thank you very much. Raj in Sunnyside. Hi, Raj. You're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Nice talking with you. I'm a long-time listener.
Glad you're on, Raj.
I was a very enthusiastic supporter of, and I voted for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She was a fresh voice and very charismatic, but I think she's dead wrong on the Amazon deal, because those jobs would have been high-paying jobs. The people would have paid plenty of state and city taxes. Amazon would have paid taxes, because these $3 billion, that was just a discount on their taxes. So I don't see the problem giving them an incentive. So and all these local politicians, Daenerys and Bremer, who are they representing? Most people were for the Amazon moving into Sunnyside, in Long Island City. And I think they were absolutely wrong. And I'll vote accordingly next election.
Do you like other things she's doing?
Yeah, I think she's a really fresh voice. I'll give her a pass, just her. But Van Bremer and Daenerys, I'm not going to vote for them again. But I'll give her a pass because she's very... it's a fresh voice. She's charismatic. She's young. And I think she deserves a second chance, as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
But on the Amazon deal, I think she was completely wrong.
Raj, thank you very much. WNYC's Bridget Bergen, New York One Noticias, Juan Manuel Benitez, our guests. Bridget, having covered Queens politics as much as you have, Raj there mentions Jimmy Van Bremer, the local city councilman, who was also for it before he was against it. Van Bremer is said to be running for Queens Borough president for 2021 when that office becomes vacant. And we saw the polls that Raj referred to, including 70% of African Americans, 80% of Latinos, and that Siena College poll released just before the Amazon deal collapsed. I believe that was a statewide poll, so it's not like they're polling the district or polling Queens only. But there was another positive result in a Queens poll earlier. Think this is a net plus or minus for Jimmy Van Bremer as he runs for Queens Borough president?
You know, I think it will be an issue in the race, and I think it may be a challenge in parts of the district where, people are looking for jobs. Talking to people who are in Long Island City, there were real concerns about displacement and about infrastructure and, you know, reports about real estate speculation and rising rents starting to happen before the campus, you know, had any shovels to the ground. And yet there are parts of Queens where folks, certainly neighboring neighborhoods and other parts of the borough, where people may have seen those jobs as an opportunity and really, you know, demand some answers from the council members. So I think the long-term view of this will be really interesting also to see what ends up coming into Long Island City going forward. I mean, right now, one of the things that we think about when we think of the crisis in New York City, the crisis is really housing. It's not as much a job crisis. And so how are those issues being dealt with and being addressed by these candidates?
And certainly Amazon was seen as likely being very bad for the housing shortage and affordability crisis in Queens. Jerry in Astoria, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jerry. Thanks for calling in.
Thank Thank you. I want to say that I have been on the socialist left since I was about 14. I am a baby boomer myself. I'm actually almost 60 now. I voted for AOC. I met her a year ago. I want to say that she is in a contradictory situation in some ways. She has to, in a way, a person like her, and for that matter, Sanders, represents a whole, I'd say about 20% or 25% of United States citizens who are social democratic in some way. I am much to the left of AOC.
You're the left of her.
Yes, I'm far to the left of her. It is very unusual to get me to vote for anybody. I think both the Democratic and the Republican Party are ruling class parties, and uh-huh. perhaps we shouldn't be participating uh-huh. in her. But I think that she is representing a true social democratic part of the United States. Now, I want to say one thing. We had socialist congressional representatives in New York. Vito Marcantonio, for instance, in East Harlem, was one. And one thing that distinguished Vito Marcantonio is that he was one of the best constituent at doing constituent assistance mm-hmm. of anybody, both for all the people in East Harlem.
And Jerry, I'm going to leave it there because I want to keep it in our limited time pretty focused on Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez, but I get the point you're making about Democratic Socialists and how you see their constituent service. Mason in Jackson Heights, you're on WNYC. Hello, Mason.
Hi, I'm a 73-year-old man. I voted for AOC. I was very enthusiastic about her candidacy. I am very much, my support of her has withered a lot, specifically over the Amazon deal. And Jimmy Van Bramer, I don't think I could ever vote for him again. And the reason why I say that is because if Amazon had come in, put in their investment, then we could have gone and changed the culture of the institution. They're gone now. They're simply going to go someplace where people are not going to object to what they have. They are not good stewards of resources, including their employees. They match most of the big corporations in the Western world, and we should have gotten them here and mm-hmm. then forced them to mm-hmm. change.
Mason, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much. Elaine in Jackson Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, Elaine.
Hi, Brian. Thanks so much for taking my call. I'm a big fan. I voted for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in both the primary and the general election. And I think she's wonderful. I really appreciate the effect that she's had on Western Queens. I feel like for a long, long time, Joe Crowley had just so much influence. And now I feel like people are loosened up and able to, you know, really allow progressive values and progressive legislation into the mix a little bit more. I feel like the effect had had a huge effect on the election of Jessica Ramos, who suddenly became, you know, more of a possible candidate. And of course, now mm-hmm. she's holding the office, and similar with other representatives. And it's just been great. And I feel like, you know, I'm sorry, I failed to remember her name, but the reporter you have on the show who talked about what we really suffer from in New York and certainly in Queens is housing, and that the effect of Amazon, I can't help but think, would have had such a powerfully negative effect, a ripple effect in Long Island City and in Jackson Heights and in Queens. I mean, I noticed, you know, as we were looking at real estate prices, how they would just skyrocket in anticipation for their presence, and I just feel like we can't afford it. This neighborhood is not like mm-hmm. that.
Elaine, thank you so much. Jonathan in Sunnyside, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jonathan.
Thanks for taking my call, and I'm on board with the caller two callers ago, and I think you're going to hear, and AOC is going to hear more and more from us. I voted for her. Of course, there was no choice given the Republican that was running against her.
Did you vote for her in the Democratic primary against Joe Crowley?
No,
that was the real election.
Well, I'm actually unaffiliated. I left the Democratic Party in the 90s because of Sleazy Bill, and I left the Republicans at 2010 because of the Tea Party. I'm a centrist, mm-hmm. and I think most people are.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're all very frustrated that we got a lot of people who know how to protest and very few that know how to govern these days. Compromise is necessary. I'm furious that she blew the Amazon deal, and the only thing that could make her worse in my mind, if she didn't stick up for us,
and stop the Queensborough Bridge from being tolled eventually. So I'm glad to hear...
Queensborough Bridge from... Sorry, I don't... what did you say? If she could stop the Queensborough Bridge from being what?
Yes, I think somebody should tell her that her constituents wanted this Amazon deal on the whole, and I think the polls show that. And I just hope that she doesn't bring her Green Deal with the congestion pricing and throw us under the bus with the Queensborough Bridge eventually.
I see. But Jonathan, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you. Juan Manuel, a caller before I mention this, and I think we're seeing on the board, though, obviously any short-term call-in is thoroughly unscientific. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to get calls for and against AOC's action on Amazon and how people are viewing her after a few weeks of office. We have plenty of each from her district.
I asked her yesterday what she felt about all the criticism she was getting for her position on the Amazon deal. And she told me that sometimes she feels that she's the only one who read the deal between the city, the state, and Amazon. And I think it's a really complicated issue for people to understand. And I think it's a really complicated issue to poll. Because if you tell people, do you want Amazon to come to Long Island City, build a new campus, and also give New York 25,000 jobs, high-paying jobs at $150,000 a year, of course you're going to say yes, right? But if you read the deal, even though there are many positive things, I believe, and many negative things for New York, one thing that's clear is that the city and the state were willing to give Amazon billions of dollars in tax incentives. And a lot of people in the city and also all around the U.S. are questioning that way of incentivizing economic activity in a place like New York. They are saying, why should we give Amazon so many billions of dollars, one of the richest companies in the world, to one of the richest CEOs in the world? Why are we giving them that just because they are promising a city like New York to bring 25,000 jobs? And even though the jobs idea is a promise and it's extremely enticing, you have to wonder, why is Amazon asking for so many incentives if they are already so big and so rich? Can they come to New York City without asking for incentives? And obviously, they weren't willing to do it like that.
Although AOC has been widely fact-checked on this claim, made repeatedly by Amazon opponents, not just her, but including by her, when the deal collapsed.
What do you say to those that criticize them pulling out, that you know the district now is going to lose 25,000 jobs that could have come there?
Well, one of those things is, A, we were subsidizing those jobs. So for the city was paying for those jobs. So frankly, if we were willing to give Amazon willing to give away $3 billion for this deal, we could invest those $3 billion in our district ourselves if we wanted to. We could hire out more teachers. We can fix our subways. We can put a lot of people to work for that money if we wanted to.
But really, say de Blasio and Cuomo and others, that money is not just there to be used for other things. It would have been a discount off many billions in extra tax revenue Amazon would have paid. Fair fact check?
Yes. And I asked her about that yesterday. She said that those comments were misconstrued, that not all of the $3 billion that were tax incentives because of all the tax bill that we were going to, the tax revenue that the city and the state were going to get out of those jobs, not all those $3 billion were going to be just that. As she mentioned, that $500 million of those $3 billion were basically capital investments from the city and the state to start Amazon to operate in the city. And what she also said is, like, why are we having always a conversation about giving tax incentives like $3 billion to companies like Amazon, but we never talk about giving incentives to working class people, to teachers, to people that are value creators in this economy. And that goes, like, this is not just AOC. This is not Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez only, Brian. There are many economists today, and that's to her credit, like Mariana Mazzucato. She wrote The Value of Everything. I interviewed her on your show last year. Here.
And when you were filling in for me.
Right. And she spoke about how we have to think about differently about who is the value creator and the value extractor in the economy. And why aren't we investing in education when it comes to giving like incentives, but we are willing to give so much money and the subsidy, some estimates give the subsidy per job to Amazon would be around $45,000 per job. That's a lot of money to give Amazon.
The Green New Deal. Here is AOC on that from her Saturday Bronx inaugural.
The Green New Deal that we introduced 2 weeks ago, when we first were engineering it before it was introduced, they were saying she's divisive. She's too confrontational. No one will sign on to a single piece of legislation that she introduced. And then the first day, we were able to introduce a resolution in both chambers, co-sponsored by every presidential candidate and every Democratic presidential candidate, and 65 House members.
So, Bridget, is she even leveraging people's position after, 6 weeks in office in the Democratic presidential race?
Absolutely. I mean, she's certainly going to influence the presidential primary. What will be very interesting is when we hear her take a position on a candidate, we all know that she was a strong supporter of Senator Bernie Sanders, worked as an organizer for him in the Bronx in 2016. But absolutely, she is helping to shape the conversation in 2020 by forcing issues onto the table that maybe the candidates would not have talked about themselves. And the Green New Deal is a great example of that.
And here's Nancy Pelosi sort of dismissing the Green New Deal, sort of not.
Quite frankly, I haven't seen it, but I do know that it's enthusiastic, and we welcome all the enthusiasms that are out there.
And here's Claire McCaskill, defeated by a Republican for her U.S. Senate seat in swing state Missouri in November, even as AOC and many other freshmen were taking seats from Republicans in the House.
I'm a little confused why she's the thing, but it's a good example of what I'm talking about. A bright and shiny new object came out of nowhere and surprised people when she beat a very experienced congressman. And so she's now talked about a lot. I'm not sure what she's done yet.
Well, we've been talking about what she's done. Now, that was in December, Juan Manuel.
And she's gone, right?
Claire McCaskill had already been defeated when she said that on TV, I think on CNN, but I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But that was before Ocasio-Cortez was swinging. But I wonder if that kind of positioning by Claire McCaskill represents something we're going to see in the Democratic presidential field by whoever's trying to carve out mm-hmm. the more centrist and less democratic socialist lane.
You can agree or disagree with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, with her ideas and with what she represents. But using the words of one of your callers, she is the real deal. She is a smart, young politician who knows what people are thinking now, their worries, what they want to see being represented, the ideas they want to see represented in Washington, D.C., and she's taking that enthusiasm and that ideology to D.C. Again, she didn't come out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. She is channeling those voices and those people in her district and all over the country.
Had you seen, when you interviewed her yesterday, yet this Daily Mail article or any other one that criticizes her for living now in a, what the Daily Mail described as a luxury apartment complex in D.C. with no affordable housing in it and shopping at Whole Foods near there, which is owned by Amazon?
I don't think none of us have enough time to read every single little thing that they write about her trying to criticize her. Some of the criticism, I'm sure it's really valid. Most of it is just really bad, and I'm not going to use a word that I would use outside of the radio station.
yes, but we can think of what the initials are. But to that point, Bridget, and then we're going to be out of time. The 2020 national political races, not just for president, you can just see already how the Republicans are going to get ready to use AOC as sort of a poster villain in exactly the way they used Nancy Pelosi in 2018 and before.
Absolutely. I mean, we've already heard it from President Trump talking about the creeping influence of socialism. A couple of points. One, you know, Nancy Pelosi was reelected, and we have seen so far in her role as House Speaker, she is a force to be reckoned with. And two, you know, one of the things that's important to remember about the election of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was the way she went about it was to bring new people into the political process. When I interviewed her, when I did my reporting on her, she was out registering new voters in Queens in September of 2017, knowing that she had to get people registered so early in New York State for the primary that was in June of 2018. So the whole approach that her campaign and a lot of the folks who have organized with her have been taking is to tap into, as Juan was talking about, people who have not felt listened to and to engage them in the political process. And what I think that the challenge that poses for Democrats, you know, like a Claire McCaskill or folks who've been in office for a long time, is it just completely throws up conventional wisdom about who you talk to, about where you spend your money, about how you target your campaign, because suddenly you actually have to talk to everyone who is registered, not just your triple prime voters who turn out for every election. You actually have to represent all of your constituents, and that's a challenge, and it changes the whole way we go about doing campaigns and elections.
WNYC's Bridget Bergen, Spectrum News, New York One, Noticias's Juan Manuel Benitez, thank you both so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, much more to come.